Good morning. So last week we started learning the alphabet and learning how to read words. We covered the first 9 pages. Let me just, particularly for the 3 of you who've just joined, just go over just one or two things from that. And we learned that Hebrew, you read from right to left, and Hebrew, we have consonants. Most important part of the alphabet are the consonants. And we started learning them. And then the consonants were the original part of the text. And then vowels got added in later. And the vowels consists of a series of dots and dashes that are placed above and below the consonants. And we've learned a few of them, or most of the vowels. And here is a particular word. And the way you would read this, you start at the right-hand side, you read the consonant, and then you read the vowel that is associated with it. Then you go on to the next consonant, and the vowel, and so on. So this would be read as melech. And it would be made up of two syllables, meh, and then lech. And we learned that most syllables start with a consonant. You could say virtually all of them start with a consonant and then can end either with a consonant or with a vowel. So here we have a syllable that begins with a consonant, ends with a vowel, and then the second syllable begins with a consonant and ends with a consonant. They have more vowels, and we learned that they have a long A. They have both long and short vowels, a long A and a short A, a long E and a short E, and so on. And a long A, for example, isn't the same as what we think in English as a long A. So it would be A instead of what we think of as being a long A would be A, which is actually in Hebrew a long E. Hebrew is more strictly phonetic than English. English is not at all a phonetic language. The same vowel in different settings can be pronounced lots of different ways. Hebrew pronunciation at least is consistent, although there will be some differences between individual speakers of Hebrew. And John came to me this week and said that he looked at another Hebrew book that we'd used 10 years ago, and the pronunciation seemed to be a little bit different in that than what Dobson is suggesting. I can't remember which particular vowels it was. Was it the A?
Short A.
Short A. Ah. Oh.
It was like
ah. Yeah.
Do consonants ever come together? Two consonants not separated by a vowel?
Two consonants separated by a vowel?
Not separated by a vowel.
Yes, you will have that.
Okay.
And so what you can have in that case, if we take a C for consonant, V for vowel, and then you could have, you can have that, yes. And we actually today will learn what, there's a particular sort of vowel mark that will be used to indicate that.
But is every syllable either a CV or a CVC?
Yes.
You don't have like a CC.
No. No, although you can have two consonants separated by a minimal vowel.
Okay.
Well, there would be CC here, but this wouldn't be a syllable in here. Okay. But we will learn there is an extremely short vowel that we don't have a sign for. We use a lot in English. You are not aware that you use it in English, but you use it every minute in English. And it doesn't have a distinct symbol in English, but it does have a distinct symbol in Hebrew. The
schwa.
The schwa, yes. Right, very good. Okay, so We then had worked through pages 1 through 9. We'd been progressively introduced to about 3/4 of the alphabet, alternating between learning some of the vowel, the consonants, and then learning some of the vowels. Now, at the beginning of chapter 2, we will review this, so at this point I'm not going to go back over that for you. And we'll jump in, start back in at the top of page 10, picking up from where we were, where we'd reached last week. So this is entitled Section 8, Dots Within a Letter. We've already seen a lot of dots being used above and below and within for vowels. And we've seen that dots can be used in some of the consonants to affect their pronunciation. All right, so we learned that there were 6 letters that are different with or without a dot. And that was Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Kaf, Pe, and Tav. And that's what we're going to review right now. Here it's the first section. So we've now read 3/4 of the Hebrew alphabet, 3/4 of the 22 consonants, and you've seen that who is he and he is she. That's the point that we ended on last week. One of the amusing parts of Hebrew, those two pronouns. And you've seen that these 6 consonants, so Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Kaf, Pe, and Tav, have an added dot. So they can be written with or without the dot. And with the dot, it marks the letter as being what we call hard. And without the dot, it is what we call soft. Now, to all intents and purposes, that really only affects the pronunciation of 2 or 3 of these letters. If you were a native speaker 2,500 years ago, you could have discerned the difference between them. But now it's really only the Beit and the Pe. So what you can think of is that when the sound is soft, it has an H following right after it. Okay? So when it's hard, is with a dot N. And we pronounce that as a B, a G, a D. This is a K. It's a P. And that's a T. When they're on their own without a dot N, it would be pronounced as a B with an H, so what we could say an aspirated H, G with an H, D with an H, K with an H. Now, in English, generally, when we have PH, we pronounce that as F, right? And that is how this indeed is pronounced in Hebrew, is the soft P is pronounced as an F, and the BH is pronounced as a V. For the other ones, certainly for us as non-native speakers, we really can't distinguish. Some would argue that the KH here would have a slightly different sound. And it used to be that the TH, the soft T, the soft Tav, really would be pronounced as the. But and older grammars would teach it that way. But that, in modern practice, that's gone by the wayside. And that tends to be pronounced the same as sort of a hard T. Perhaps followed immediately by a little H, but I wouldn't worry too much. The two to pay attention to are the Beit and the Pe that then would be pronounced differently. And Dobson notes here, some English writers indicate the softer sound by an added H, others by a line above or below the letter. So if you're transliterating this out, you sometimes, some people would transliterate the soft bait as B followed by an H, and some would have it as B with an underline. This would be G with an underline, or and so on. Or increasingly, actually, some are beginning to just render it as a transliterate it out as a V, since that's how you pronounce it. Now, how do you figure out whether one of these six letters has a dot in it or not? I should point out a helpful mnemonic, so that's a memorization device to remember which these six letters are that take the dot. And this is the standard mnemonic for it is Begad Kafat. So we get the B, the G, the D, the K, the P, in this case the soft P, and the T. So if you can remember Begad Kafat, then you can remember, hopefully, what the six letters are that take this dot. So, the rules for figuring out when you have this letter, when you don't. And initially it might seem overwhelming, you've got to pay attention to this dot, and there are all sorts of other dots that you have to pay attention to. And initially it seems overwhelming, but the more you read, you'll just get used to this, and it'll become sort of automatic to recognize this. It's sort of like learning to drive a car. You start as a 16-year-old, or you've got an overwhelming number of things to try and pay attention to, but it then eventually becomes second nature the more of it you do. So after a vowel sound, a hard letter usually becomes soft. So that's the main distinguishing thing, is if this one of these six letters is immediately preceded by a vowel, that is, by an open syllable, so a syllable, every syllable begins with a consonant, it can end with a consonant or vowel. If it ends with a vowel and is then followed by one of these six letters, this consonant will be soft. And if it's preceded by a consonant, it will be hard. It will have a dot in it. Unless there's a pause or a punctuation. So if it's like an end of a sentence and now we move on to the next verse, then that sort of, as it were, resets things. But if it's within a sentence, then if the preceding syllable ends with a vowel, these six letters, if one of them is used, it will be a soft one without a dot. So, here we have an example. We have the word batach. 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 So that's a bait. And nothing comes before it. So it's not preceded by a vowel, and it's not preceded by anything. So there's a dot in the letter, and we pronounce that as a hard B, not as a soft V. Batach. And then the next word there is becha. Becha. Again. Now, that becha, under the bait there, we have two vertical dots that we'll be introduced to on the next page, and the transliteration for that has an upside-down E that you probably won't recognize unless you're familiar with phonetics, and that also we'll deal with on the next page. But for the moment, that's... So both begin with a hard B. Now, you put those two together, and we get batach becha. Batach becha. He trusted in you. But if we change the order of that, which we can easily do in Hebrew, with having it the same meaning, where we put the becha first, then we have the batach becomes vatach, because becha ends with a vowel. So you would have becha vatach. Becha vatach. So you notice there that bait of batach no longer has a dot in it, because the becha has ended with a vowel. It's what we call an open syllable. But the meaning is the same.
They say in previous, they say unless there is a pause or a punctuation.
Mm-hmm.
Is this considered a pause?
The between baka and bata. No. The pause of punctuation, that would be like a end of verse. It would be a major piece of punctuation.
So if there's a one sentence, even between the words there, it still doesn't consider a pause.
Right.
Oh, okay. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the dot here is called a dagesh lene. Lene is Latin word for light or weak. So it's a weak dagesh. Dagesh is a dagesh is a Hebrew word. So here, for this grammatical terminology, we've got a mixture. We've got one Hebrew word and one Latin word used to describe this. So you can think of it as a dagesh lene. You might not remember the lene part, but a dagesh, so it's helpful to learn that little word, that this dot is called a dagesh, and whether you want to call it a weak dagesh or a dagesh lene, it's that. It goes only in these six letters. It never alters the meaning of a word, and the basic rule to remember is whether the preceding word ends with a vowel, then that will make this. And to all intents and purposes, the ones you really need to pay attention to are the bait and the pay, because then that really will change the pronunciation to a V and an F. Okay? So that's one type of dagesh. But there is another type of dagesh, another type of dot, that can occur in either these or other consonants. And this marks them as strong or doubled. And this can occur in most of the consonants, five consonants it cannot occur in. So you can have, for example, a zayin, which is the Z sound, the Z sound there. If you put a dot in that, it doubles the letter. Then we have a yod with this dot in it, becomes a double yod. Mem with a dot becomes a double M. Nun with the dot becomes a double N, and Samak with the dot becomes a double S. So, we have Melek, Melek there, meaning king, and Hamelek, Hamelek, meaning the king. And there you get to see what the article is, the consists of ha with then a dagesh, a dot put in the following syllable. So melek, here we've got two syllables. If then we add on the article, we have Ham, meh, lek. And this bit here is the, it's the article. And this doubling of letters can occur quite frequently and for quite a number of reasons. So you're going to see a lot of these dots around. And this dot that marks letter, it marks letter as being strong or as being doubled. So that's sort of what we mean when it is strong. It's been intensified into two letters, two consonants, and it's called a dagesh forte. And forte is the Latin word for strong. So you can think of these as either the weak and the strong dagesh or the dagesh lene and the dagesh forte. And then there are five letters that never have a dagesh in them. The other 17 all do. And the five that don't are Aleph, He, Chet, Ayin, and resh. And the first four of those are what we call the guttural letters. Guttural because to some extent or another they're made deep back in the throat, or somewhere in the throat. And you can't really double sort of what's going on. But yeah. And then resh, it also can't really double that. Okay, so that's a second type of dot that can occur in a letter. And then there is a third type of dot that can occur only in a he that is at the end of a word. So Dobson writes, when he comes at the end of a word, it is not usually pronounced, it is silent. So we saw this last week. Haya, haya, he was. Maya, maya, meaning 100. And Malka, Malka, meaning queen. And you notice in those three that in the transliteration that they don't even include that H at the end. And that's really because in those instances, remember we learned that a couple of the vowels, three of the consonants began to be used as vowels. Like we have in English the letter Y can be used really as both a vowel, sometimes as a vowel, sometimes as a consonant. And there are these three Hebrew characters that are consonants, but sometimes get used as vowels. And this happened increasingly in what we call late biblical Hebrew, and particularly in the time between the Testaments. We know this from looking at the Dead Sea Scrolls, where they make a lot of use of these consonants as vowels. And that's Yod, He, and Vav. So in this instance here, the hey really is functioning as a vowel together with the comets that it comes immediately before it. So really what you have is the comets and the hey functioning together as a combined vowel. And so then that doesn't get transliterated. But there are times when, and generally that will often... that's the standard feminine ending for a feminine singular noun, so that occurs a lot. But then in some words, that hey, there's a hey at the end, and it really needs to be treated as a, it's really functioning as a consonant, not as a vowel. And so in the case where there's ambiguity, and to make sure that you don't misinterpret it as being a hey used as a vowel, to force you to recognize it as a consonant, they put a dot in it. So Dobson writes here, in some words, the final hey needs to be lightly pronounced. In such words, the final hey has an added dot. But in this case, the dot isn't called a dagesh. It's not functioning like either the dagesh lene or the dagesh forte. It's called a mapik. Then some scholars argue that hey with the mapik was not pronounced. And it's really hard for us to pronounce an H at the end of a word. It's just not something we actually do. So I wouldn't worry about trying to pronounce it differently. I'm not sure there's a difference in pronunciation. But the helpful thing, what it really indicates when you have a dot and an H at the end of the word is it forces you to recognize that as a consonant and not think that it's a vowel going with the preceding comments.
Can that change the meaning of the word?
Yes. Because... and it can, and that's usually why it's put in there, is because it will have an impact on the meaning. Because it will, when you have a hey on the end, usually the reason that hey is going to be there at the end is because it's, and you really, you haven't yet learned this, but it's because it's a third person feminine singular objective suffix, so it really it's a little part of a word that gets added on there. We actually get an illustration of that right here. We get three examples here at the bottom of page 10, the third of which will be particularly helpful here. So la, and don't worry about whether you're actually hearing that H at the end, la is to her. And we've already seen like bo and ba and baka to you, to me, to him, to her, and so on. So the L, the lamed there is two, and then the A is her. So that's actually two separate words jammed together to her. Ba, ba is in her. Again, two separate words, a preposition, B meaning in, and then A, her. And then Malka, Malka, her king. Now, this last one is a good illustration of how the meaning does actually change. Because if we had Malka like that, that is without a dot in the hay, that's actually just the feminine form of Melek, and so that would mean queen. So this is, and we'll learn this in a few weeks' time, the usual way to make a feminine a noun feminine is you'd have the masculine noun, and then you add an A on the end, and now you've added an extra syllable, and the syllables shorten up and things, but Malka would be a standard feminine ending. And there are the hey, the comets and the hey are functioning together really as a vowel. But if we have the exact same thing, spelt the exact same way, but now with a hey, with the mapik in the hey, that's forcing me to say, no, that's a consonant in its own right. It's not really functioning as a vowel. And it then means it's melek, with this ending that indicates her. So this would mean queen, i.e. a feminine king. And this means her king, where this bit here is king, and this bit here is her. So it actually has a significant difference in the meaning. And this will be, it's only in the letter he, and it's only when it's the last letter of the word. And it occurs reasonably frequently. Okay.
Is there a name for that? Like the dash is for honor?
So this is called a mapik. So it's their bottom of the page there is called a mapik. Now, don't worry too much. You can get all uptight about this. This is an awful lot of stuff to remember. The best way to learn this is just, and Dobson's goal really is to get us up and reading as quickly as possible, and it's by reading. The more you read, the more you'll begin to notice, oh, yeah, you'll recognize the dots, and just through familiarity, you'll increasingly be able to distinguish these three types of dots, the Dagesh Lene, that occurs in these Bagat Kafat letters, the Dagesh Forte, which doubles the letter and can have an impact on the meaning, and then you'll slowly learn there are all sorts of different reasons as to why a letter can get doubled, and then this Mapik at the end of the word. Okay? So try not to feel too overwhelmed by all these dots. When it's acting as a vowel at the end of a word, it will never have a dot in it. The dot there is put in cases of ambiguity to tell you this is a consonant. Not this hey here has been used as a consonant, it's not being used as a vowel. Okay, so that's the dots, at least the dots that occur within consonants. Now, section 9, some more consonants, and another, two more consonants and another vowel. We have the letter, it's called the letter tsade, and it's pronounced as a TS, and its transliteration, the standard transliteration symbol for this is an S with a dot under it. So it's as in cats, the TS at the end of cats, so on. And it's written like that. And this also has a final form. So if it's the last letter of a word, you can think of it as this stroke here sort of unbends and extends down below the line. So if we have our baseline of our text here, it runs right along like this. There we go. Okay, so we saw last week there are a few of these letters have a different form if they are the last letter of the word, and tsade is one of them. So we have some words here to read. Tsin, tsin, pets, pets, and zoom. So you notice the difference between the pets, where it's ts, and the z of zoom. So one's a ts, one's a z. Can be easy to confuse the pronunciation of those when you're beginning to learn. So the next line we have matzah. Matzah. And that is a real Hebrew word. Matzah means he found. It's a verb, matzah. Yatsa, yatsa, that's the Hebrew verb meaning he went out, yatsa. Chafetz, chafetz, so that guttural chet at the beginning, chafetz, means he takes pleasure in, next line, mitzvah, mitzvah, meaning a command. So a bar mitzvah, right, that a Jewish boy will have at the age of 13, means son of commandment. In that case, bar there is the Aramaic word, equivalent of ben, the Hebrew word ben. Bar mitzvah, son of a commandment. And to say you're son of something means, it's a Hebrew idiom meaning that you are shaped by. So a bar mitzvah is somebody who really is characterized as being one who observes the commandments. And then because now we live in the equal opportunity age, there's now bat mitzvah, which means daughter of commandments. That's for the girls. And bat there, we've seen, is the Hebrew word for daughter. Okay. So mitzvah, commandment, eitz. Is tree, and then tzon is a flock or sheep. So there, it's a little more difficult for us to try and get that sound out as an opening letter, opening sound of a word, but tzon.
Is it like tsunami?
Yeah, like tsunami. Yeah, that's a good example. Great. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, the previous one? The tree one?
Eight. Well, if you can try and get that guttural, it begins with an IN, so you're trying to open with a deep throaty guttural, which if you're not a native Middle Eastern person is really difficult to do.
Could you pronounce again?
Well, I would pronounce as eights, in which case I'm really not pronouncing the IN just because I'm phonologically challenged, having not grown up speaking gutturals. But if you're in the store, we have a lot of Israeli people living here in the Bay Area and a lot of Hebrew speakers, and if you ever hear them talking in the store or talking near around them, you hear all these gutturals that they are, these raspy sounds.
I heard that described once as a lot of coughing and spitting.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Next we have a vowel, and this is, it's an U sound, as of the U in book, U, book, U, and it's written as three dots arranged in a diagonal line and placed underneath a letter, So underneath the letter bait, for example, you could have them arranged like that. Ooh. So we have kulanu, kulanu. So in that, the kaf there, the opening consonant, has a dagesh lene in it because it's opening a word, there's no vowel before it. The second consonant, lamed, has a dagesh forte in it, so that doubles the letter. So when it's transliterated out, it's, you see it's written out with a double L. Kulanu, kulanu. And that means all of us, all of us. Next is aguda, 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 where the dalet there is being doubled, and the hay at the end is really functioning as a vowel together with the patah, aguda. That means a troop or a bundle. And then achutsa, achutsa, or hak, sorry, achutsa, achuza, achuza, with a z sound, not a tsa sound. And that means landed property. So those last two open with an aleph, which is really just really a placeholder for the opening vowel, and so we really don't pronounce it. It's a glottal stop, which kind of something that we as non-Semitic speakers really can't do.
So the dagesh forte and the tsa make it sound longer, or it just
don't necessarily make it sound longer. I suppose
it doesn't change the meaning, right?
It can have an impact on the meaning. The dagesh forte, it will be there for a reason, and there's usually some grammatical reason as to why it's there, and it will take us. You know, that will gradually become apparent as we go through the rest of this course as to, and there'll be a number of different reasons why. Why those dagesh fortes are there?
So only dagesh.
Dagesh lene.
Lene do not change the meaning.
Right. Only the dagesh lene does not change the meaning. The dagesh forte will have a grammatical function, and will impact the meaning of the word.
Could the dagesh forte add the consonant to the end of the previous syllable then?
Yeah, because it doubles it, so it will end up with the one of those two consonants goes with the previous syllable, and then one consonant will open the next syllable. Yes, like we saw with Hamelech, which I've that of these two. One mem goes with the previous syllable, and then one opens the next syllable. But if I were to tell you all the different reasons why that dot, why these dagesh fortes can be here, you would feel totally overwhelmed, and you would give up in despair. But, but over the course of the year, you will learn all the different reasons why we have these dagesh fortes there.
Mm-hmm. So this the new vowel that we learned, can we say that this is a short U, and then the other one on page 9 is the long?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So the bottom of page 9 we learned another U sound. It's a vav with a dot in it. And that dot is not a dagesh. That's just the combination is a vowel. Okay, that's a long one. This is a short one. Although that distinction was not always strictly maintained, particularly as Biblical Hebrew developed, the distinction between short and long vowels. Okay, next we have the Q sound, kof, kof. This is written a little bit like our P. Off. And it's pronounced, for us in English, Q is always followed by a U, and we would pronounce that as qu. Qu. This, the cough is just, it's really, it's pronounced a bit like a, really like a K. And it says K at the back of the throat. I'm not sure how you pronounce K when it's not at the back of the throat. Because... Yeah, that's how you pronounce a K, is you're closing off the back of the throat. So probably one of the things you're recognizing is you're actually becoming a little more aware of what your mouth is doing as you're, right, which is as you pronounce these sounds.
How did you pronounce the name of that letter?
Kof. Kof. And we're going to learn the names of the letters in the next lesson. So you know, don't need to worry too much about them right now. So this is kof. So we have kutz, 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 and then reading. Let's see, I'll read cross. Read down the column there. Kum, kum, and kum there is a verb meaning to get up. Kum, yakum, yakum, yakum. He will get up, or he gets up. So you see there, beginning to see one of the ways in which you can change that vowel by or change that verb by adding the ya on the front, makes it into he. He does something, third person singular, and we'll slowly learn how you modify vowel verbs for person and number. So yakum. Next column, tsuk, tsuk. Tsuk. Kates. Kates. Kates means end. And kol. Kol. Kol means a voice or the sound. Kol. Kom. Kom. And then hukah. Hukah. Where, so opening with that guttural, the hukah. The kof there is doubled, so that's a dagesh len forte, so transliterated into a double Q. And then the he at the end is really functioning as a vowel together with that comments. And then that means a statute or a law. And then katan, katan, katan meaning small. So it looks strange for us to see these transliterated out without using a U after the Q. But that's how you would transliterate it. And other languages do this, and we even have the name of a country, Qatar, right, in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf, Q-A-T-A-R. So other languages are quite happy using a Q without a U after it.
So in the middle of page 10, where it lists the ones that does the doubling,
mm-hmm. Right. All the letters except for the five, there are five that are listed that are never found with a dagesh. That's the Aleph, He, Chet, Ayin, and Resh. And all the others can have a dagesh, forte. So all other 17 can be doubled.
Oh, yeah, I see. For example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's for example. So, right. So here we have the kof doubled. Mm-hmm. The vav? Right.
Then you have a dot.
So this Right, the vav here, which is pronounced as a W or a V, and I pronounce it as a V, the, this can change a lot. So we've already seen it can serve either as a consonant or as a vowel. Right? And then when it's functioning as a vowel, it can have either a dot above it, in which case it's an O, so equals O. It can have a dot in it, in which case it's an U. Or it can have a dot in it, in which case it becomes double V. So, how do you know context? That's just the easy answer to say to lots of things. Context, which is really, you'll just learn to recognize when it is functioning as a vowel, the U, and when it is functioning as a double V. And you'll just learn that. At the moment, it might seem overwhelming, but the more you read, and the goal here is get us up and reading quickly, and then the more you read, you'll begin to get familiar and comfortable with these things. Okay, section 10, more dots. So lots of dots, too many dots. Now the dots are all supposed to help us. Biblical Hebrew was written without any dots or dashes. It was just the consonants. The dots got added in as by the scribes to help in pronunciation when Hebrew was no longer a living language. And we saw last week that for a living language, if it's your native language, you can actually generally do fine reading without the vowels. Okay, you can read a string of consonantal text in English, and we know the language well enough, and our vocabulary is good enough, and our understanding of syntax is good enough, that we just can automatically supply the vowels. And the same would have been true for Hebrew, and it's true for modern Hebrew. So in Israel, modern Hebrew is written without vowels, and native Hebrew speakers can read their papers just fine without any vowels. Although they do have made use of yods and heys to function as vowels in case of ambiguity. So. Okay, here we have some more dots that are called a shwa or a shava. Two vertical dots may be used under a consonant in three different ways. First of all, to further shorten the vowel sounds A, E, or O. So we've seen that we have the first vowel, the horizontal dash, is called a patach, and it's a short A, A. Ah. Now, you can add two vertical dots to it to make it a very short A. And it becomes what we call a hatef patach. You don't really need to concern yourself about the precise name. But it shortens it up. And these generally occur under the guttural letters. So the five letters that are marked over on the previous page that don't take a dagesh forte. Aleph, He, Chet, Ayin, and Resh. So the four guttural letters and then Resh, which tends to function sometimes a bit like that. They tend to be the letters where you have this shortened form, this composite short vowel. So either a patach, a segol, or a kametz with these two vertical dots. And it becomes a short A, like the vowel that begins amend. So when we say amend, phonetically, what actually is that opening vowel? What does it sound like? Amend. So is that a short A, a short E, a short O? It's the minimal amount of sound of vowel to get out to get you to the consonant, right? Amend. So that's a really short A. Next we have, on the next line, the three dots arranged as a little triangle. That's a segol. That's a short E, we learned. And you put the two vertical dots next to it, and it makes that a really short e, like the e of behind. Behind. So if you think of that vowel that you're making between the b and the h, that's a really short vowel. It's the minimal. That's the minimal that's necessary to get you from the b to the h. Now, is that sort of phonetically? Is that actually a different sound than the a of amend? Amend behind. It's not really a different sound. It's just it gets so short that you've really almost lost the distinction between precisely which vowel it is. It's this minimal length vowel. And that's what is called a shva. Shva. So, and it's called that in Hebrew. Shva is the Hebrew word for this. But then that's been picked up by general phonetics and actually now is used standardly throughout the whole grammatical, phonetic literature to refer to this particular sound. Now, we don't have a name for that. Well, you know. Matt, you obviously knew the name shva. I'm curious as to how you knew. Okay. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So we use that really short sound a lot, regularly as we speak. This morning I had a banana for breakfast, between the B and the N. What tends to happen there, you can say it banana, but when we have a three-syllable word like that in English, you tend to shorten up the syllables that are further away from the end of the word. And so that between the B and the N at the front of the word gets shortened up and becomes a verb. I still need some sort of little vowel in there to get me from one consonant to the next consonant because you can't pronounce a B immediately followed by an N. So I need something in there. And this is this minimal sound that you have in there. So we have this in a number of words here at the bottom of the page. Amad, he stood. And then if I shorten up that opening vowel, it becomes amod, and that's a imperative, stand. And you can almost think of this as being amad is when it's nice and lengthened out. You've got nice long, it's a regular vowel. And you're giving this abrupt imperative, and so you shorten things up. Amod. Amod. Elohim is God. So that one's even difficult because I open with the Aleph as sort of a little placeholder. And it's a placeholder, it's a glottal stop that opens a word, and then it's immediately followed by an extremely short vowel, Elohim, which then is the minimum necessary to get me on to the Lamed. Elohim. And then Eloheinu, our God. And then Oholo, where that, now we have the third type of vowel there, the comets, that's a little T shape, which normally would be a long A. Sometimes we're going to see it's a short O, and here it becomes a really short O. And Oholo. Now, in these three instances, phonetically, or in transliteration, these have been written out as A with a little cup on top. E with a little cup on top. O with a little cup on top. And that tends to be how in transliteration, you would refer to these. Sometimes in older things, you would see it used, written out as a little superscript, A, E, or O. But this really is the standard way that you would indicate that now. The dot above the M is the vowel O, that it's a holom that we had at the top of page 9. O as in bowl. Okay. So that's the first use of these two vertical dots, is to shorten an A, an E, or an O. Those, and there are three vowels that can be shortened this way. And the consonants that these generally go with in most instances are what we think of as those gutturals, aleph, he, chet, ayin, and resh. Secondly, second use of this is to make a very short vowel sound under a consonant, particularly under the first of two consonants that stand together at the beginning of a word or a syllable. And this gets written, transliterated out, at least in phonetically, in strict phonetic transliteration symbols, as an upside down E. That's the like the symbol in the IPA, the International Phonetics Alphabet, for a Shava. And this gets used a lot in the Hebrew Bible. And we use it a lot in English. It's just you never knew that you did. So, and it gets used particularly under the first of two consonants that stand together at the beginning of a word or syllable. What tends to happen, and we do this in English, and this is... So I remember when the Winter Olympics were held in Nagano. Right? I don't know if you... We in the West had to learn, how do you pronounce Nagano? Well, you know, at least if I recall right, we got told, no, you have to pronounce each syllable with about equally, Nagano. Whereas part of what we would might be inclined to do is want to say it's Nagano. Right? So what have we done with that first syllable there? We've shortened it up. So we've got a three-syllable word, and our natural inclination in English is to shorten up the first syllable for a three-syllable word. Or actually, really what is going on is we tend to think of things, well, you don't actively think of this, but subconsciously what's going in your mind is you're working back from the end of the word, and you're working back syllables, and got last syllable, fine, second last syllable. Well, by the time you get further back than that towards the front of the word, by the time you get three syllables away from the end of the word, you tend to shorten up that. And that's just, you never think about that. It's just, that's just part of something we automatically do, tend to do in English. So we would, generally we'd pronounce that as something like Nagano. And we had to be told, no, it's Nagano. So the same thing happens in Hebrew. And generally what happens is things, the longer a word gets, the more the consonants, the syllables shorten up at the front end of the word. Here we have Kali. Kali, and this is only a two-syllable word, but here the opening syllable has shortened up. And this is just, as you're speaking, and particularly as you're speaking a whole string of words, it really automatically happens just in the way that you're speaking. That's what happens. Many of these seem arbitrary rules, but generally they've happened because of just the process of how you speak and how you end up speaking. And that's true with this shortening of syllables at the front end of words. So Kali is there. So we have a kaf. Then we have this shva, a very short syllable, very short vowel. Then a lamed. And then the Hirek Yod, so the dot and the Yod there belonging together, functioning together as a vowel. And that means an implement, a vessel, a tool, a weapon. Lakha is the next one. Lakha. Lakha. So again, the Shava there being a very short vowel. And Devarim. Devarim is the last one. Devarim. So a Dalet. And it opens the word, so there's no vowel before it, so it's got the dot in it, Dagesh Lene. It's a hard D, followed by this Shva, this very short vowel, Bait, then a long A, Devarim, and then the Hirek, the dot under the Resh, and the Yod together functioning as a vowel. And that means words.
So basically, we try to pronounce without considering that, it'll probably pronounce the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. If you were to sort of to just
Because there's probably no other way unless you add a different vowel there.
So if we were to spell it out fully, a singular for davar would be davar. We make it plural by adding im on the end. Davarim. You say that 10 times quickly, and by about the fifth time, you're going to be saying davarim. Right? And that's just what will have automatically happened. And you'll have shortened up that opening syllable and made that vowel, that long A, you'll have made that this minimal length vowel. So it becomes a lot less threatening when you think of it that way. This is just sort of the inevitable development, phonetic development of the language. And then to realize that we do this all the time in almost every sentence we speak in English. So that's the second use of these two dots, shva. And then the third use is to mark a consonant that closes a syllable in the middle of a word, or to mark a final kaf, where in the kaf we saw is one that has a different form at the end of a word, and then it has these two dots are put in it. And in this case, the two dots do not indicate a sound. They are silent. And since we like to use long words for jargon, we call it quiescent. So the section B, we have a vocal shava, meaning that it's sounded out. And section C, we have a silent shava, or quiescent shava. It is not sounded out.
So are A and B the same shava?
A is what we call a composite shava. So it is a shava joined together with one of those three vowels, a patach, a segol, or a kametz, composite shava. B and C are just a shava on their own, one of which is vocal. B is vocal shava, C is a silent shava.
So in A, you're turning a vowel into a shava.
Yes, you're turning a vowel into a shava, and it tends to happen with, and generally the place you'll find it is with these five sort of letters that you can really treat, consonants that you can treat as being a little group. The four gutturals, so aleph, he, chet, ayin, and then resh. You generally, with extremely rare exceptions, extremely rarely would you ever see it under any other letter. Maybe just a handful of times in the whole Hebrew Bible. So sufficiently rarely that actually you don't even really need to worry about that. You're generally going to see it under the gutturals. Under these gutturals. Now, so B, the shava in B is pronounced, and it gets written out in transliteration, and it forms part of a syllable. The shava in C is not pronounced, it's not transliterated, and it doesn't form a vowel within a syllable. So one of the challenges is how do you learn to recognize one from the other? Well, let's first read some these words. We have Malki. Malki. Malki means my king. So Melek, king. Add on E on the end, which is my, and then Meleki, things just abbreviate and they shorten up. Malki. Now, you could sort of figure out that that's Malki instead of Malaki. There's a dagesh in the kaf there. Remember, that indicates assuming that that is a dagesh lene, it could be a dagesh forte, it could be meaning a doubling, but in that case we'd see a double K in the transliteration. It's a dagesh lene, which means that the preceding syllable does not end in a vowel. So that shva there cannot be a vocal shva, otherwise that would count as a vowel. And if it was malaki, with the l there as a very short shva, then the kaf would not have a dagesh in it. So that's one of the ways in which he reasoned. But that's, you know, there's another thing, it's like learning to drive, there are so many things to think about. But this is one of the things that eventually, after you've been reading a while, will be the sort of things that more automatically is going through your mind. And you will get there. So, so Malki, you notice that the Shiva there really just closes out that first syllable. So we have Mal is one syllable. The Shiva is not transliterated. It's not a vowel. It's just a end of syllable marker. Yeah, it's a dash, and the dash there, the hyphen there, the dash is really just the marker between syllables. And it's used because essentially every consonant in Hebrew has a sign with it, a vowel marker. So if it doesn't really actually have a vowel with it, in this case it's being marked with, as it were, a non-vowel, if you think of it. And with rare exceptions, essentially every consonant has some sort of a vowel, or in this case, a quote-unquote non-vowel with it. Next one is mitzvah. Mitzvah, so that means a command. We had seen that on the previous page, mitzvah. In this case, the tzadeh there has this shva, and it's a silent shiva. So that's a two-syllable word instead of a three-syllable word. It's not mitzvah, but mitzvah. And then lake. Lake is an imperative meaning go. And that kaf, the final kaf, and this is unique to the final kaf. And for whatever reason, the Masoretic scribes, when they added these dots and dashes, they decided to add these two dots to that final kaf. It's the only final form, it's the only final letter at the end of a word that takes those two dots. Now, we'll also see, and we have already seen, that final form kaf can take other vowels, but if there's no reason to put another vowel in it, it will have this shiva, and that just indicates close of word, close of syllable. Now, as you read, you'll become increasingly aware of the uses of these two dots. So this is just, as you get more comfortable, you'll just recognize them, and you'll begin to distinguish how they get used. So it's called the shiva. The shiva in section B, which you see in Kali, is a vocal shiva because it indicates a sound. The shiva in section C, as in Malki, is a silent shiva because it marks the close of the first syllable. And it isn't, it has no pronunciation. In Hasdaka, which is formed from Chesed, meaning covenant, loyal love, with Ka on the end, meaning your. The first Shiva is silent, so it marks the close of the syllable Chas. And then the second Shiva is vocal. It indicates the minimal sound necessary to get from the d to the k, d ka. So here we have a general rule. When two shavas stand together, the second one is always vocal. The first one is silent, and the second one vocal, with one exception, which is if they occur at the end of a word. A shava at the end of a word is silent. And the only time you're going to find that is in a final kaf. So there, if the preceding syllable also has had a shiva in it, you actually then will have two silent shivas in a row. But that's the rare exception. Generally, when you have two shivas in a row, the first one is silent and the second one is vocal. And then gradually, slowly, we'll learn the rules as to how you determine, the basic rule is, yeah, we'll slowly learn how to distinguish whether it's a vocal shava or a silent shava. But for the moment, you don't need to worry too much about that. Just know that they're there. Right. Well, yeah, so the hyphen in Malki, the hyphen there, he's really just used that as a symbol to separate out syllables. I could, if I spelled that out, separating it out as syllables, I would use a hyphen, and it would be has de ka. Or there, I really would draw an upside down E, which. Okay, section 11. More consonants. Now we're at the end of the alphabet. We have an R, which is called a resh, as in rain. And resh, this is written like that. And here you have to distinguish it from the D sound. And the difference there is up here in the top right-hand corner where the D has this little serif there. And incidentally, so when Jesus talks about not one jot nor tittle, what he's referring to really is not one yod. And yod is the smallest Hebrew letter. Right, we saw it's the Y sound, that, not one yod, or one, and the tittle is this little serif here. Not the smallest letter, and not even the smallest little stroke of the letter will pass away. So if ever you've wondered what the jot or tittle.
That one, and which, the other one?
The yod.
The yod? When he says not, well, it gets written, King James has it, not one jot or tittle.
Right.
What he's saying is not one yod, which is this, it's the smallest Hebrew letter, or one, and then the tittle is the little, this little stroke that distinguishes, say here, the resh from the dalet. It would distinguish the bait from the kaf. Right there and there, and some of these other letters that are easily confused. Okay, so resh is just, it's an R sound. We have rim, and rat. Or rat. Ari. So there begins with an aleph, which is just sort of the placeholder, the opening glottal stop, followed by one of these composite shavas. So a very short A sound, ari. And that means a lion. So ari, sometimes you get that for... Israelis are called that, Jewish people are called that, or they might be called Ariel, which means the Lion of God. Barzel is iron. So there, that shava under the resh is a silent shava. Barzel. Baruch. Shava in the final kaf, which is not, it's a silent shava. Baruch means blessed. So this is how any Hebrew prayer begins. Baruch atah Adonai, blessed are you, O Lord our God. Ruk. Putz. Erev. I should try and start that with a guttural, but I can't really erev. And that means evening. Boker. Boker is morning. Boker. Gadol. Gadol. And that means great, large. Roof. Roof. So that final pay. So remember a different final form for the pay. And without a dagesh in it, it's pronounced as an F. Roots. Roots. Davar. Davar. So the bait there, no dagesh, so it's a soft V, davar. And davar means word. Davar. And then the plural of that is devarim. Devarim. And so just naturally, you've made that a three-syllable word, and the first syllable has shortened up from a long A to then this shava, this minimal vowel sound transliterated as an upside-down E. So that'd be a vocal shava, devarim. And the hirek under resh, and then the yod after it, together functioning as a vowel. So that yod in there is behaving as part of the vowel, not as a consonant. And divrei. Divrei. And this has been shortened up from divarim. Divrei, it means words of, and it would be immediately followed by another noun. The words of the Lord would be divrei Adonai, the words of whoever. And when we've shortened it up like that, then there's been some changing in the vowels. But we'll learn all that when we get to learning the nouns. So that's resh, the R sound. The next two letters are written very similarly. They have the same basic shape, the exact same shape, but then with a different position of a dot. So they're seen and sheen. Seen, which is just a S sound, so has a dot on the left-hand side, the left-hand stroke. It's transliterated as a S with an acute accent on top of it. And it has the same sound as the sonic, the S sound that we already learned. So we have sar, sar, and sare, sare, and Yisrael, Yisrael, where that shva under the sin is silent, Yisrael. Sus, sus, and that means a horse. That's with the samak, the first S sound. Susa, susa. So again, see that ah ending, the comet's hey, where that hey is functioning really as a vowel, and we've seen that before as a feminine ending. So if sus is horse, susa is a female horse or a mare. Sim, sim means as a verb to place. Se, se, se is a lamb or a kid. So a young, whether it be a sheep or a goat, a young one. Sane, sane means he hated. And seraphim, seraphim, where we have a vocal shva under that opening consonant, and then the pe is a soft pe pronounced as an F. And these are seraphs who are burning ones, blazing ones, shining ones. Now, if the dot is over the right-hand stroke of this character, then it's pronounced as a sh, sh, sh. And this is transliterated as an S with a caret on top of it, so like a downward-pointing little arrow. So we have rosh, rosh, meaning head. So there, that's the letter resh followed by the dot. So the first dot there is the holom, it's the O sound, the O vowel going with resh. Then there's an aleph, which is like a zero width consonant, right, placeholder. And then a sheen, and the dot on that sheen goes with the consonant. So right, Rosh. Shema, where that the two dots there under sheen are vocal shema, a vocal shava. So shema means listen, as of Shema Yisrael, hear Israel, listen up, O Israel. It's an imperative. Asher. So we begin with an aleph, which is this just a placeholder for then this very short composite shava, very short vowel, asher. That's a relative pronoun meaning who or which. So we're going to see that a lot in the Hebrew Bible, the pronoun. Sheish. Sheish is the number six. Shave. Shave, where the bait there is a soft bait as a V. Shave is the imperative, the command, sit down. And Eretz. Eretz. Is earth, so that final consonant there is the final form of tsade, pronounced as a tsa, tsa. So we get a whole number of these different sort of S sounds in Hebrew. We've had two different forms for just a straight S, so samek and sin. Then there's sh for sheen, then the tsa, tsade, ts sound. Lots of these, what we call sibilants. And final column, shamar. Shamar, a verb meaning he kept. Sha'al. Sha'al, he asked. And so Saul's name is Sha'ul, comes from this, asked. And shamayim. Shamayim, meaning heaven or sky. Now, the sin and the sheen, these two, they sort of function as different consonants, but also sometimes they're the same consonant. And you can find words, sometimes they'll be spelt with one and sometimes spelt with the other. I don't know if you remember in the book of Judges, there's an episode there when there's tribal warfare within Israel, and this is in the days of Jephthah, and the tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan want to come across, and this test is given. How do you pronounce? Do you say Sibboleth or Shibboleth? Remember, you know your Old Testament well enough to know that story of, this is around about Judges chapter 11 or 12, somewhere in there. So, and this evidently is a dialect difference between whether you live on the east side or the west side of the Jordan. Remember, you have 2.5 tribes of Israel living on the east side of the Jordan. And on one side of the Jordan, they would spell this word and pronounce it with a sin, and on the other side with a sheen. And so that then becomes a test as to, and you better make sure you say it right, otherwise you get killed in that rather gruesome episode, okay? So that's what's going on there, if ever you've wondered, what on earth is going on there? So that's why it's Shibboleth or Sibboleth, switch it with a sheen or a sheen.
Yeah.
And then the sheen and the samek, often we find words, variations in spelling, sometimes spelt with a samek, sometimes spelt with a sin, and they pronounced it the same way.
They actually did pronounce it east to west before they put the dot.
Yeah. I don't know if it goes that way. That would be a good way of remembering which side it is.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. Okay, we have some notes here. Note that Yashav, meaning he sat, yashav, yoshev, yoshev, sitting. Now in yoshev, the dot there that is above the sheen is actually serves two purposes, has a double function. The first is it serves as a holom, as the vowel O going with the yod, so it's yo. And then secondly, it serves as the dot over the sheen. So there are two different ways of writing this, and this really is just a matter of style. You could write it out as that way, you'll shave. Or you can write it out as that, you'll shave. And in this case, you have to remember, okay, now this has to have a dot on it, either there or there. There's no dot there, so that has to be that. But then you think, this yod has to have a vowel somewhere, and the only vowel that can possibly be is this dot here. So in that case, really, it's two dots, and they've just lined up one on top of one another. Now, the Hebrew Bible would tend to print it like that, and it looks nicer. Here, with the development of computers and so on, it depends upon your computer software, whether if you actually wrote it out like this, whether it would align the dots or put them next to each other. Probably that one of the things that OpenType ought to be able to figure out. And but generally, and certainly if I was writing this out even by hand, I would just use the single dot there that would do double duty and serve both those purposes. Okay. Next we have another vowel. And this is our last one. And this is a confusing one. So we end on a confusing note. And this is this little T shape, which we've already seen before, functioning as a long A at the bottom of page 5. Ah, as in father. But sometimes this little T shape gets used, it indicates not a long A, but a short O. And this is one of a confusing rule for people, and I find this in the Hebrew reading group. It's hard for them to remember when it's a long A, when it's a short O. There is a good rule for determining it. Fortunately, it's not very common. So the symbol A normally represents a long A, but in cases like, so occasionally it will be a short O. And the rule is, and you don't need to worry yourself about this, when it's in a closed, unaccented syllable. So that's what we will slowly learn, is when do we have a closed, unaccented syllable. Yeah, we did have oholo, where when it's in a composite shava, so it's put together with, then it's always functioning as a short O. Because we already have a composite shava, which becomes a short A, the short A. So here we have some examples. Okla. Okla. So that's pronounced okla, not akala. Okla. And okla means food. Hokma. Hokma. Hokma means wisdom. So that's hokma and not hakama. So to begin with, and just follow my guidance as to whether it's pronounced as long A or short O, and gradually I'll introduce and we'll repeat why, and once we learn how accents work and a lot of other things, you'll then be at a point where you can then begin to understand why it would be a short O instead of a long A. Oh, as in dog, okla. Oh, well, it's a short O, so I guess, okla, yeah, hokma, dog.
He's from the UK, right?
Yeah.
So maybe over there it's the same sound as the O here.
Yeah, dog. It's a very short O, which I guess dog, yeah, okla. Okla, dog, dog, dog. I would have made a bit more like O, but a very short O instead of ah. Okla, okla. So hokmah, Yeah. The ish is the last word there. Ish means a man. Ish. Next column, kol. Well, yeah, I guess I really would say, yeah, kol. And then kol is the next one below it. And then we have a note here. In cases like kol, and that's how it's spelled out fully, is kaf, then a holom, so the dot indicating an O, and then lamed. In its shortened form, and you notice that, and it's followed by this hyphen that is up at the top of the line, as it were. And that's used when it's then joined on to another word. So it'll be a noun usually that comes immediately after it. And it functions just like a hyphenated word in English, where it's two separate words joined together, and really they're functioning as one word. And in that case, the syllable has gotten shortened up, and it's become an even shorter O. So kol, the first one spelled out fully with the dot, the holom, is a long O. This one is a short O. So kol. And there, that's the most common occurrence of having this as a short O. This little T sign is a short O. And hopefully it's one, because you'll learn, because kol is used so often, meaning all or every, you'll learn the pronunciation of this.
So do they really write with a hyphen there?
They really put the hyphen in there, yes.
In Hebrew?
Oh. In Hebrew, that really is put in there, yes. It is in there as a hyphen. So we have, for example, kol ish, meaning all man, every man, and it really would be written out with that hyphen between the kol and the ish, and it would be pronounced really as one word, kol ish, and just inevitably you're going to pronounce that opening syllable kol as a short o. Next we have shemara. Shamara. Now this is where we will eventually learn why is that Shamara and not Shomra. So over in the left-hand column we had Okla instead of Akala. Here, why isn't it Shomra instead of Shamara? Well, fortunately, you will get to the point where you can distinguish that. And actually, the scribes here help us out because they will put in a little marker that will help us with that opening vowel, force us to read it as a long A instead of a short O. But we will get to that. Ohel is tent. Ohel, and then oholo. We saw that before on the previous page. Oholo, where we have a composite shava. So the comet's the T-shape, but there it is a short O, now made even shorter by being a composite shava. And that means his tent. Okay. And then over the page, our final consonant, tav, T. And this too can be with or without the Dagesh Leni. In the old days, it would have really, without, as a soft T, it would have been pronounced as TH. So this is why, in Bethlehem, that comes over gets transliterated into Greek with a TH sound and then comes over into English with, at least transliterated as a TH sound. But now generally we pronounce it as just a T both ways. So we have ata, meaning you, singular, ata, natan, he gave, eight, meaning time, tamim, meaning perfect, and that has a dot in it because it opens up the word, there's no preceding vowel. Whereas the top left-hand column, ata, that dagesh there is a strong dagesh, doubling the consonant. Tachat means under. And tuv, tuv means goodness. Now, note there that we have the other T sound, that's a tate, and there's really no difference in how we pronounce them. Whether the tate or the tav, they both just pronounced it the same as t. Right-hand column, kala, kala, where the final hey there is really functioning as a vowel. Echad, echad, echad means one. And tisa, tisha, tisha. Tisha means nine, is the number nine. Tisha. And that shava there under the sheen is silent. Tisha. Okay. Now, we put all this together and we get section 12, a little bit of reading for us to do and to see how well we can, since we're hopefully, you're beginning to, the letters, the shapes of these letters are beginning to get familiar. So this is a reading from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Shema Yisrael Adonai. Now I have to explain why I read that as Adonai when it's written as Yod, He, Vav, He. Why didn't I read that as Yehovah? Right? So if I were to pronounce that out, it would be, the way it's written, it would be Yehovah, right? Which is where we get Jehovah from. But this is it's a very unique word. It's this is the personal name of God. The Jews would, the Hebrews, the Israelites would never say Jehovah. Jehovah is a creation of the 16th century. And the consonants for this, for the personal name of God, are Yod, He, Vav, He. And the derivation of this is given in Exodus chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. It's derived from the third masculine singular form of the verb to be. So it has something to do with he is. It's a four-letter word. The Jews came to view that it was so sacred, that it was too sacred to pronounce. They were afraid of desecrating the name. So it's what we call the ineffable tetragrammaton, which means the unspeakable four-letter word. And what they started substituting, instead of saying, pronouncing this out, they would say Adonai, which means Lord. And they evidently did that by the time then we get to the New Testament and Jesus talked about the personal name of God as being just Lord. So when it then came time for the scribes to add in the vowel points, what they did was that they added in the vowel points for Adonai, which would be this. So when you see this, generally, sort of just out of custom, we generally don't say Yahweh. We generally just say Adonai. Following the Jewish custom. Sometimes today Jews will instead of saying Adonai, they will say Hashem, which means the name being this. And then also at times if you read blogs by Jews, sometimes they will then use God. And they will just so they don't, they're sort of carrying it to an extreme so they don't supposedly ever have to actually say that out. Then when it came time to the 16th century, well, Hebrew became a lost language in the West. Christians then, and Christians for 1,000 years, the church didn't know Hebrew. 16th century, part of the Reformation was Christians started learning Hebrew again. And so they came to this, and they found this in their Hebrew Bibles, and they just went along and say, Yehovah. And they said, oh, right, we read that as Yehovah. And that's how we ended up with Jehovah. So Jehovah is actually a mongrel. It is the consonants of the personal name of God with the vowels of Adonai, Lord, put together to form a made-up word that no Jew would ever, ever have pronounced, but that 16th century Christians found in their Hebrew manuscript Bibles, and that's where we get Jehovah from. Generally now it's recognized that most probably this personal name of God would have been pronounced as something like Yahweh. Yahweh. And so there is an increasing tendency now to refer to Yahweh, and we use the personal name of God and refer to him as that. And Jewish scruples are sort of falling by the wayside.
In their desire to not pronounce it so as to not desecrate, but God says, if my people will call on my name, didn't he expect his people to use his name?
Yeah, and his name is used a great deal in the Old Testament. He refers to himself, the Lord God.
But what if people misuse his name all the time? Unfortunately,
well, yeah, yeah.
We have too many people who misuse his name today.
Yeah. And then what you find in our English Bibles today is that any time you have Lord spelt with small caps, it's this word that's being used there. So they're picking up on this Jewish tradition of using Lord and then put it in small caps just to distinguish that that's what's going on here. How do you get Yahweh from here?
Yeah.
Well, so in the Hebrew text, you would have just have had the consonants. So it actually would have been pointed or had the vowels like that. Yeah.
If they really write down.
If they really, yeah.
So I guess the Yahweh is really after some other research to figure out how to reconstruct it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not from the scribe.
Right. Right.
But today we read Yahweh.
Yahweh or Yahweh, yeah. Yeah. I guess to be consistent, we'd say Yahweh, but it's just Yahweh has gotten so established. But that's generally what we say. Right. We don't know for sure. This is the best reconstruction. This is the current scholarly reconstruction of what it most probably was. Yahweh. Well, it's far better than Jehovah. Yeah. Jehovah is a mongrel word. Now, whether an English translation will finally get to the point of actually being bold enough to, instead of putting Lord, to then put Yahweh, we might get to that point. Certainly more and more books will refer to Yahweh. Yeah, and it'll become, it's sort of, well, for me it's automatic. I just automatically say Adonai, which I'd actually almost now just as soon sort of go back to then saying Yahweh Eloheinu, Yahweh Elohim, the Lord God. Okay, well, our time is more than over. We've got another class wanting to get in here. So we'll pick up at section 12 there. So go back through this chapter, just look through it so you just get more familiar with the shape of these letters. We'll finish off this chapter. Then at the beginning of lesson 2, we'll actually formally learn the names of the letters and the order in which they occur. We've actually gone through them more or less in the order in which they occur. And then on page 21, there's a little diagram of how you can write them out. Some of you have made flashcards or have other sources, other things that will help you with this. And so goal is just to get you familiar with the shapes of these letters, both the consonants and the vowels, and to get you up to the point where we then can read. Okay?